Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have Dr. Tim Hayes with us. We welcome you to the show. Today is Possibility Wednesday, November 26, 2014. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
All right, here we are in Bristol, Tennessee, getting ready for Thanksgiving to everyone. We offer an awesome and wondrous Thanksgiving. Hope that all the things that are there to be thankful in your life, that you are thankful for them. And as you do that, that thanks goes forward and brings even more blessings to your world. And we're blessed by the fact that you've chosen to join us today to engage in this understanding and this healing process called forgiveness from the first century Aramaic language. And, of course, the work is that of learning to remove everything that's possible from the mind that is out of harmony with the truth of what it is that the mind is designed for. And, you know, we have a very simple definition of a human life, and that is hold a newborn child. And when you hold a newborn, you get an experience of a human life. And the work of healing is that of embodying and incarnating that human life and recognizing that anything that is less than that awesome active presence of love is that which needs to be disappeared from your structure. And the word forgiveness in the first century Aramaic language is a word that was used to describe the disappearing of those things in the mind that never belonged in the mind. The hostility, the fear, the rage, the guilt, the grief that, you know, our world has brought into the space of our newbornness. And if we didn't know how to deal with those energies, the tendency was to simply buy into them, to accept those imprints in our minds, and then to take the information and the realities based on those kinds of imprints as the truth about life, and recognizing that those things are not the truth about life, they're the truth about what we've bought into. And forgiveness is the way to literally deconstruct and remove those things that never belong within the human mind. And so our work is simple. The creating of community, a global community to support bringing forward that ancient Aramaic understanding of forgiveness and engaging in that technology to the point where we allow ourselves to be freed from the hostilities and fears of the world. It's interesting how many minds, having bought into a world based in hostility or fear, do the exact opposite of the instructions of the one that they say they follow. And I was doing some reading recently about the idea of the rather ancient idea, although it still seems to be alive to some degree in the world today, of getting rid of heretics, in that there were people who actually believed that the slaughtering of a, someone that was deemed to not believe like you did, a heretic, which interestingly enough, the word means a person with choice, that it was appropriate to kill, maim, torture in order to get rid of that heretical thought, that person who actually thinks they should have choice. So it's just interesting to watch what's gone on in our history in the planet and what it takes to change the game, what it takes to wake up as real, true human beings, to function out of compassion and love. And, you know, going back to the 2,000 years ago and listening to Yeshua, he talks about those who do the work that he puts forward will love those who hate them, will do good to those who despitefully use them. Of course, that's the Greek translation. In truth, it speaks of being love in the presence of, as opposed to the act of loving another. And human life, when it's there, naturally is the presence of love. And so we're looking to bring forward that understanding and to support and create community of people who are willing to let loose of those things that are unlike love. So that's our task. We're delighted to be sharing this space with you. You might, if you feel inclined, call in and just share a little bit about what you're thankful for today. That would be cool to hear. And beyond that, Jeannie, is Dr. Tim with us?
He is, and he's on.
Well, hey there, Dr. Tim. I hope all is well in your world. You're probably getting ready for a family Thanksgiving if it follows your normal holiday time, and you've probably got some things to share from us from the support group last night. How do you be, sir?
Well, I'm doing well. I'm very grateful for this work. I'm grateful for the potential in my life to have not just one, but two Mind Shifter groups per week. I won't have two this week because of the holiday tomorrow, but we had one last night, and again, we mimicked what we did last week in the Thursday group. We followed up the Ian Lungold video with the first part of Purpose, Personal Power, and Commitment, because it ties in so well about learning to pay attention to things other than just the physical energy and the physical world and use that to guide my thoughts and my actions and my energies throughout the day. And we had two brand new people there last night. We had a very small group in terms of the usual people because of the holiday, and three people that normally attend the group have been experiencing physical discomfort, upper respiratory issues, and so they didn't, you know, they texted me that they wouldn't be there last night. So we had a smaller group than normal. We had seven people, and people really liked that video, especially coming off of the Ian Lungold Mayan calendar consciousness video. And so we got to work through helping people develop their secondary purpose. And then we had time to have somebody work through a reality management worksheet. And the worksheet was somebody who said, I'm really angry because when I'm meditating, I have no back pain, and when I'm not meditating, my back hurts. So the worksheet was on the anger at this process and the back pain, and it was quite useful. She went from a level 10 upset to a level 2 upset. And she didn't quite know why, but it generated several other worksheets, and we outlined them for her so that she can keep working on that. And then it generated lots of interesting questions about the process and this thing we're calling love in the worksheet process. And as you say so often, it is just a joy to have those questions, even from people who are brand new and don't understand the first concept that we're talking about, because in going back and making myself slow down to review that most fundamental concept, I get it at a deeper level. So it was a I would call it a glorious evening of interaction with people at the support group, and on we go. And tomorrow I will be responsible for the food and house cleaning at my mother's and getting the house ready to host the family. So I will try to be on, but there's no guarantee that what my mother needs us to do to help her get ready for the holidays is going to allow that tomorrow. But I will make an effort to be here.
Awesome. Well, I had a conversation with a gentleman today who did a five-day series of workshops we did up in Indiana, about maybe 6 years ago. And it was interesting because it's someone who took that week of work and basically in isolation has been working with tools and feeling quite delighted with the progress made, and yet missing so many pieces of the puzzle, you know, speaking about how he brought up the events that are happening in Ferguson and how that made him sad. And so I quizzed him about, well, do you think something outside of you can really make you sad? Well, I was just observing the fact that that happened and that made me sad. It's like, well, okay, let's take a look at a really powerful and important fine point in the work, and that is that denial is the act of thinking or speaking as though something outside of us is causing something inside of us. And you'll notice that you've had 1,000 events in your life where something appears. Your observation is that has made you sad. And my offering is that even those events in Ferguson haven't made you sad. When this happened to your son, when that happened to your wife, when that happened to your job, none of that made you sad, though your mind observes that that seems to make you sad. The truth is, the reason you're sad is because there's sad in there. And any object of attention that can resonate, it will do, and we'll seem to be observing, just simply observing an actual fact that makes me feel something. As opposed to, I have something inside of me, a feeling, and that resonates my feeling, and I miss the piece in between where, because that's resonant in me, I get to experience it. And it's such an important part, an important piece of the puzzle to recognize that the subtlety of and the ease with which denial occurs. And there were a couple of other events in the conversation where, you know, the automatic mind just turned to something outside causing something inside. And it's like, well, you know, you've been doing worksheets, you've been doing some of the work, but, you know, you work during the day, so you haven't been on the radio show. It's a gentleman who had planned to do an intensive, and then, you know, life happened, and he just never got there. And the practicing in isolation leaves one subject to the influences of the world and the insanity of the culture, where when one chooses to be part of a community that can continuously give us feedback, and when we've got that feedback, we have that opportunity to refine the understanding and refine the process to the point where, you know, in ancient times, spiritual communities came together to do their work together. In fact, the root of the word that has been represented as, you know, going to church, liturgy, is our common work, and people coming together in community to support each other in deepening and deepening and deepening the understanding of the process. So the fact that support group goes on is pretty awesome, and we're delighted to be part of getting to hear the reports every week and how it develops and how it moves. And then, of course, being up there a few weeks ago for a week to play in the community was fabulous. And so it's certainly one of the things that I'm thankful for.
Well, it's a nice energy. It feeds in a loop. It feeds and nurtures me, and I give my energy to it, and then it feeds and nurtures me again, and I give more energy to it. And I highly recommend it as a practice.
And what's that you're recommending, Tim?
Building a community, having a support group, attending a support group. As you said so often, you don't have to be Michael Rice with 40 years of experience doing the work. You don't have to be a licensed clinical psychologist or a master's level therapist. You just have to pick up the tools and start using them and invite one or two friends to do it with you, and the magic starts to happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And to just watch how, as people really engage in the tools, how the life, you know, doesn't become all of a sudden perfect, how much more ease and grace and liberty and joy there is in people's lives. You know, hearing the reports from people of how, you know, if this had happened yesterday, I'd have been going nuts, and today, well, I had a little wrinkle, but, you know, it was no big deal. I just did a worksheet and clink, it's gone, done with it. It's pretty awesome to watch the ease that comes into people's lives when they choose to really use the tools. And, you know, if you're in an area where there isn't a support group, we encourage you to start one. You know, you can start with a few DVDs, gather one other person, or, you know, Dr. Tim shared with us before how he's done support groups just for himself. When he's gone to a group and there's been no one there, he's carried on just as though it was a regular group, and made great progress, or one or two people. And so it doesn't take the whole community to come together, but it sure does make a difference when you start to bring forward the tools and share them with others. So, Jeannie, let's check in with Jeannie and see if anything's happening in the chat room for us to be aware of, sweetie, or is there anybody in the phone queue with a hand up? Our call-in number, of course, is 646-200-4169. We'd be delighted to hear your voice and see if we can be of support with anything that's happening with your process and your work.
There's no questions. Nobody has their hand up. So if someone presses one, you're first in line without waiting.
Okay, how about the chat room? Anything exciting happening there today?
We were just talking back and forth when you mentioned about Ferguson. A comment was made that as we see chaos, we forget that there is also positive, because now people have the ability to change the laws that govern the people, and we hope that the energy guides them.
For sure. And, you know, we start looking at men's rules compared to the actual laws of the universe, we see quite a differential, and to recognize that this thing called law, you know, there's a whole course we do called Laws of Living. We're going to get to visit with Susan in a few days and actually do a stillborn session with her whole Laws of Living class next Monday. And she just completed 8 weeks of Laws of Living, so we've added one additional week next week to breathe everybody. And just to recognize that law is the result of eternal forces. It is not something made up by man. Men make rules and regulations, and then there are, if we choose to develop our subtler faculties, there are energetic patterns in the universe that will guide us. And if we listen to those, if we develop those, then we get to play in a different space than what men call laws, which is usually one group of men's regulations hoping to overcome another. I was watching a video on India the other night, and the interviewer is talking to an Indian gentleman, and they're talking about how, you know, the kingdom was being invaded and how it was the duty of the people to kill for the king, and that's become a law, supposedly a law, and nothing could be further from the truth, that when we harmonize with the energetic forces around us, then we are living in harmony with law, and law is something that is not what men write down, but rather it's what living alive is as a human being
in these eternal forces and tales, and expressing in harmony with those laws becomes key. And of course, the first one, when you go back and listen to Yeshua 2,000 years ago, the first law has to do with the condition in your mind, maintaining the condition of a human life. And in Aramaic, the word that was translated when they said to Yeshua, what's the first law? That word was rachma, and it's a filter in the frontal lobes of the brain. It is a gateway for human life to enter the human form. When hostility and fear are the filters that are active and take over, then that gateway is closed down and we have no experience of human life. And where there is no human life, we can brainwash people with rules to do all sorts of crazy things that are literally inhuman, but people call it duty. Some of it's pretty crazy. Definitely wake up time to truly wake up to the human life that's around us, that's within us, and to experience that active presence of love. Again, hold a newborn child, you know what human life is. And so that's what we're here to support. That's what we're here to be part of, bringing forward in a strong enough way in the world that we reach critical mass, that there is a shift and a change that occurs on the planet. And so our call-in number, 646-200-4169. We're here to support you. The question for me, answer, if you had been at an auditorium where Dr. Tim and I have been having the conversation we've just had, what question would you have for us? What would you want to know about how to bring this forward into your world, into your life, into your community, your home, your family? How can we support you in that? If you are on the phone, in front of you, just push one, and it sounds like she's got a hand up.
Yes, area code 901, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning, Brenda here. Greetings from Memphis.
Hey there, young lady, welcome.
Thank you very much. I was caught the comment or the just the tail end of the comment of the person who called in and indicated that they were feeling sad about what was going on in Missouri. And it reminded me the other, last couple of days when I had been doing my worksheets, trying to decide or figure out whether I was feeling fear or hostility. And so it's interesting because it was a question that I was going to bring up today, but when I was on the website yesterday, I was downloading a bunch of the forms and everything for one of the gals in my class, and I came across the picture of the functioning of the human mind, where you have very clearly written out the three filters, fear, hostility, rachma, and then fear with negative, hostility with destructive, and that just cleared up my whole question. So I just wanted to pass that on when we have some not quite sure which filter that we're in. So now my question is, what would the sad filter be in, or the sad feeling be in, and going through which filter?
Well, sadness would tend to come from loss, and loss would be based, you know, creating loss would be based in fear. You know, something's going to take something from me, or someone's going to take something from me. So that would tend to, for me, would tend to indicate fear, and then that loss that comes from fear would tend to be the thing that would tie in with sadness. That would be my take. Dr. Jim, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I have to agree, and you answered this question, I don't know if it was a week or two ago, and I've gone back and listened to that, and I want to listen to it again. There's a show that's archived where I think what came up was someone from our support group had mentioned in the support group on Tuesday that it was striking to her that you never talk about sadness, and her experience has been that sadness has a whole different energy frequency to it than fear and anger. And you gave a beautiful, longer description of, you know, the core of what you just said, but you expanded on it. And I will go back and find it in the archives and make sure that Jeannie has a link to that. I think it's a critical piece for a lot of people who've been through losses and life events where the choice of their thoughts has led them to this energy that we call sadness, which is very different for most people in their personal experience than either anger or fear. But I have to agree with you that it tends to come from this sense of loss and grief, and that comes from the belief that I'm either losing or have lost something I absolutely need, and therefore I'm not going to have what I need to go forward in my life. And so it fits under the umbrella of fear.
Does that make sense, Brenda?
Yes, it does. It makes a lot of sense. That would take me to the next question the person asked me was in regard to the fact that she never felt any hostility. We were working with one of the other sheets, and she was asking why she was going into this really deep funk, and I indicated that it was probably the time for her to start processing and such. And you have one of the sheets forms which says when you start doing your healing process, then life kind of sucks, and this was happening. Your energy is down. You feel powerless and such like that. And at the bottom it said, and you want to, I don't know if it was what you wanted to hit somebody or you wanted to be hostile to somebody or punish somebody. And she said that she had never felt hostile to anybody else. However, we discussed the thing that when you don't feel like you've ever been hostile to somebody else, many times we look into ourselves and find that we're the ones that we are punishing. And so any comments you have on that, on not being able to identify a feeling of hostility?
Well, you know, when we do the personal code evaluation, you know, it's a tool that we use in our intensives to give people feedback on where their work is. There'll be some people who say their fear score is really way, way, way down, and, you know, they're in trouble with fear. But their hostility score is right up near the top. And so that person who may have fear about something may literally be free of hostility. That may be something that they've handled, and what's up for them to handle next is their fear. Then again, we may have somebody who has a very high fear score on the evaluation, and their hostility looks clean and clear, but then when you look at their love of truth score, their love of truth is also in the toilet. When they start working on the issue of truth and elevate their love of truth, all of a sudden they start letting themselves see the truth of the hostility in their minds. And so we sometimes will see when that truth score goes up, somebody who on their evaluation it looked like their hostility was handled because they were totally and completely out of touch with it. It was hidden, you know. Maybe as a 3-year-old, they were, you know, trained, you know, you're not allowed to feel this, you're bad, you're evil, you know, whatever it was. And it was there, but not allowed. And so once the love of truth score goes up, then all of a sudden the hostility score oftentimes plummets. And then again, there are some people who just don't have hostility. They've got that one handled. So it's a fairly complex issue and fairly complex relationships. And that's one of the reasons why that personal code evaluation is such an awesome tool, because it breaks down the personal code into 10 different areas. You know, stress management, love of self, love of others, love of truth, freedom from fear, freedom from hostility, love for laws of living, nutrition, digestion, toxicity, use of will, and then validity or consistency. And when you look at the interrelationships of those scores, then you start to see where the work will be best applied to free oneself of
whole process to open. And so that's all part and parcel of the process. And, of course, fortunately, we now have, you know, up until just the last year or so, the personal code evaluation is something we've always had to administer, you know, a piece of paper and mark with templates, and it's a fairly complex process, where now we finally have it in digital format, thanks to Mark, and so we can put somebody online who can take the evaluation. And in April in Florida, in the teacher's training, we'll be doing 3 days of that personal code evaluation. We'll also be doing it this summer at Heartland. Our summer schedule is set up for Heartland now. Jeannie's going to be doing an 8-day healing the whole woman. I'll be doing a 9-day why. We'll be doing a teacher, or not, pardon me, not teacher training. That'll be in April in Florida. But we'll be doing this 3 days spent on the personal code evaluation to support people in understanding how to interpret and how those relationships interact with each other. And so that teachers especially will be able to guide people as they're supporting others with the tools, will be able to guide people in, okay, here's where your biggest block is. If you apply the tools here, here are the assignments that will best support you in moving forward in that area. And it's a pretty awesome tool to have. But some people just don't have that hostility game going on in their mind. And, you know, it's always nice, you know, what one of the biggest challenges when somebody comes to Heartland is when their love of truth score is low, is their number one challenge. And if the love of truth score is low and the hostility score is low, I sort of, you know, put my helmet on before I give feedback, because the person who, first of all, has a challenge with love of truth doesn't believe that that's true. They know the truth, and they're sure about it. And if their hostility scores a challenge, they can become pretty volatile and vicious about they know the truth. And yet, you know, the evaluation just lays it right out. There's where the challenge is. And as one starts to utilize the assignments in each of those arenas, then the whole process of how the mind serves up its output begins to shift and change, and just makes amazing differences.
All right, thank you.
And also, Brenda, the diagram that you were talking about, for those who are new to the show or perhaps haven't tapped in, you can go to whyagain.org, and if you put in the search bar, I believe, Jeannie, the title, you know, on that is the Schematic of the Mind?
It's called The Functioning of the Mind.
Functioning of the Mind, okay.
Yes.
Go ahead.
It was in line with all of the worksheets, and down at the bottom under one of them, it was under one of the things listed in the under the bullet.
Good. So anybody wants to look at that, and basically what it looks at is that
it's just getting the stress, schematics of the mind.
Cool.
Okay.
If anybody wants to take a look at that, and in essence what that lays out is the fact that in the frontal lobes of the brain there are three filters. There's an hostility filter, there's a fear filter, and then there's a filter that in Aramaic was called rachma. And this is the word that Yeshua used 2,000 years ago when people asked him what was the first law. He used that word rachma, and that it was necessary. The Greeks translated it as loving your neighbor, loving God as yourself. But in fact, what it was saying is you've got to keep this condition active in your mind when you think of the Creator, when you think of neighbor, in order to maintain self. So rather than loving as self, rather than it being a verb, it's a noun. It's keeping a condition in your mind so that you maintain the truth of who you are as a human being, so that human life is always alive in you. And when that filter is active and open, then the frontal lobes of the brain where intentions are stored will provide information that is based in love in the form of intentions.
and intentions being the raw material of goals, the quality of the building blocks of goals is really important, because goals drive perception and the output of the mind. The guidance system of the mind is driven by goals. So obviously, the raw material you use to formulate those goals is pretty important stuff. And so the other two filters, hostility and fear, if fear is the active filter, then the mind is always going to look at things in a negative vein. The intentions available will be negative. And if hostility is the active filter, then intentions will be destructive. So if one has destructive intentions, negative intentions, or loving intentions, each of those is going to produce a totally different perceptual world when the results of those things show up in the mind. And so understanding how this device called the mind works, you know, I've used the example before of, you know, imagine you're introduced to a car and driving, and left to your own devices, you sit on the dash of the car, you look out the back window when you drive the car away. It's going to be a pretty rough ride, not knowing how to drive the car. In the same way, we're set into this mind, and nobody shows us how the darn thing works. And so all kinds of crazy things happen. And because we have not been shown how it works, we tend to point at everything outside of ourselves as the problem, when, in fact, it's the way we are driving our minds. And so if you formulate goals out of loving intentions, then the perception served up by your mind, the guidance system served up that will guide you to behavior, will be based in love. If we utilize the hostility filter over intentions and its output, which is destructive, then destructive goals will produce irritating intentions, or pardon me, perceptions. So the guidance that the mind gives, everything that people look at, they'll say, that really irritates me. They'll feel irritated. And, of course, they won't be feeling irritated because of what that did. They'll be irritated because their perceptual filters are set to show them things in an irritating fashion. We do have a phrase in this culture that kind of honors that whole idea, at least in a small way. You know, we say, oh, be careful of Charlie. He got out of bed on the wrong side this morning. And what do we mean when we say that? Well, whatever Charlie lays his eyes on, he's going to be in irritation about that. His hostility filter set is what we're saying. And so if you find yourself looking at your spouse, your children, your boss, your bank account, your car, your, you know, the guy down the block, and you're irritated, your mind tells you you're irritated by everything, notice that's denial and dissociation. You've never been irritated by anything, but if you've got irritation in you and your mind is set for irritation, if you violated that first law and allowed irritation to come in, then any object of attention will do to project the irritation, and that will be an internal process. And then the third filter, the fear filter over intentions, negative intentions become available through that filter. If our goals are based in negative intentions, then when we look at any object of attention, because it's the perceptual output is sourced from fear, then through the fear filter, whatever we look at will seem to be threatening. And so everything that one looks at, one can look at the most loving person in the world, there to support them and nurture them fully, but if their fear filter is set, if they violated the first law, lost the condition of Rachma, and their fear filter is set, then the most loving person in the world will seem fearful to them. Not because that person is fearful, but because that fear filter is set. And one can look in the mirror and find reason to have fear about self. And when one begins to understand how the mind operates, and threat or fear is being served up by the mind, that becomes the earthing place to begin to utilize the tool of forgiveness and to begin to repeatedly collapse perception based in hostility and fear until the mind starts to serve its purpose. And its purpose is to be plugged into your human life, plugged into the active presence of love, and only then does it truly become a human mind. You know, I've asked this question to many, many people. How many have a device in your home, your office, your car, your shop, your kitchen that works really well when you unplug it? And nobody's ever been able to come up with a device that works well when it's unplugged. The human mind is no different. If you unplug it from the power supply of love, then crazy time happens. Just take a look around the world. Listen to the speech and the words that are used, for instance, in Ferguson today. And you'll notice that the speech that's being used, it's all about blaming somebody else. Nobody's responsible. And until we wake up and recognize who we are and how we're designed to function, the mind can become our worst enemy. Get the thing back on track. Get off the dash of the car and stop looking out the rearview mirror to drive it and understand how it works. And all of a sudden, it becomes a wondrous, wonderful servant and will serve your life purpose. And that's the reason the gift was given to us. So that's what that schematic's about. If you want to download it, you can go to our website, whyagain.org, and you'll find that schematic there on the site. Any other thoughts in that regard, Brenda? Dr. Tim?
Well, I don't want to cut Brenda off if she has thoughts about it. I'm amazed on a regular basis as I see the shift in my perception when I restore myself to that loving energy. And there's been a theme in the people I've worked with in the practice and in the Thursday group recently about getting to the point where people learn to listen to that still small voice. So if they reset the filters, Rachma and Kuba, the analogy I used with someone the other day was like, it's like being in the middle of a very fast-moving, strong current river and trying to swim. It's very, very difficult, and you're either going to be struggling and fighting, or you're going to go where the river takes you, unless you get to the bank and climb out. And when you're in the middle of that with the flood of conditioning from the culture and all the news media and be afraid and be angry, and that's like being in the middle of the river, it's hard to hear that still small voice when there's all this water rushing around you and pounding over your head. But if you get to the bank and you climb out, now it's easier to tune in. And in my analogy, that's like resetting Rachma and Kuba. It literally lifts me out of that and puts me in a space where I can tune into that intuitive mind and see things that simply weren't possible when I was in the middle of the water rushing over me and scrambling to just survive and keep my head above water. And if I stop and breathe and make the conscious choice to reset those filters, to restore my thoughts to loving thoughts, absolute acceptance and peace, then I start to hear, oh, here's another intuitive hit. Here's a voice that says, why don't you go do this? Or here's a voice that says, you know what, you don't really need to do anything here. Stay in this loving energy. So that's what I would add.
Good piece. It ties in well with that quote he used from Jonas Salk, who talks about getting up in the morning, how excited he is to see what his intuition is going to tell him today. And as you say, we're in the middle of the hostility and fear game. That other voice isn't very audible, isn't very discernible because of all the noise. And what the forgiveness process allows us to do is to quiet the noise, quiet the noise, quiet the noise, until we start to see those shifts take place. And really, you know, the river current today is really the flood of non-human life that has been running the planet for so long. The hostility, the fear. I mean, you just listen to the rhetoric in Ferguson. You listen to the rhetoric in politics. You listen to the rhetoric from judges and lawyers and politicians. And, you know, it just goes on and on and on. The insanity. I know that we were in St. Louis about, 7 or 8 weeks ago now, before we went to Chicago with you, Dr. Tim. And the Sunday before we left, although the whole event in Ferguson had quieted down, it had been several weeks, it was almost, you know, it was like getting still. All of a sudden, the main newspaper in St. Louis had a full page picture, or two-thirds of the page, of the picture of this young man, you know, who had just been committing criminal acts, had just stolen and roughed up the owner of a store, robbed a store, had drugs in his body, you know, but the picture depicted this kid laying on the sidewalk, dead, or the road, and the story in the paper was about how, you know, it's in the third world that people leave bodies laying in the street. And you know, I just wonder what a major city newspaper is doing, except to do it for the money, to sell newspapers. Why, when that whole event had quieted down so much, did they run this full page, front page story? It's just like, whoa, what's the deal here? What's really going on? And the flood and the flow of emotions from doing such a thing, the inflammatory response just keeps the game going. And few are those who find their way out of the inflammatory response of relationship, of child rearing, of politics, of, you know, just the insanity of the world, to get to the point where they really, truly can begin to live a human life and function out of their purpose. There's another quote. I was doing some research on the life of Jonas Salk, and there was another quote where Jonas Salk was saying, and this is back in the 50s, just how rare it is to find somebody, that there's so many people who are functioning without a purpose, and just how important that piece is in the puzzle. And as we've talked about the last couple of weeks on the show, Tim, the video that you've been showing where the Mayan calendar taps people into their higher purpose and focuses their minds in a direction that has to do with fulfilling their purpose rather than the inflammatory insanity of the culture. So it's an interesting process to observe, for sure. And Judy, you've got somebody with a hand up.
Yes, we do. It's area code 417. You're on the air.
I think that might be me, Michael. It's Jim.
Hey, James, welcome. Glad to hear your voice. What's on your mind today?
Well, thank you. We had a very good support group meeting last night, and like Dr. Jim's, the topic in front of everybody's mind was the Ferguson riots. So we did after watching the upper and lower path video, which was a good fit for what's going on in Ferguson. You know, the lower path that so many people that are rioting are traveling. And what I'd like to share with the group is that the pervading emotion seemed to be sadness. No surprise, and I would offer that why should we be surprised at what's going on in Ferguson? If we just take a helicopter view of everything that's going on, I just see all these, and I didn't know what the decision was by the by the
grand jury.
I didn't know it until it was brought up in the meeting last night, because I don't watch the news anymore. I haven't for a long time. I just refuse to allow the Fourth Estate to rent space in my brain. And my contribution to the change on the planet, my conscious contribution to change, is to not buy into what the news media puts out there. Like that three-quarter page picture you referred to, it's criminal. It's absolutely criminal what's done. But the reason I'm not surprised by what's gone on in Ferguson is that these people, if you just look at each one of them, the ones that are rioting, as a two-legged pressure cooker, they've had pressure building up inside that pressure cooker or tea kettle, whatever image you want to use. And unfortunately, our society has not done anything for these children who grow up in ghettos and a horrible environment. And they don't have any of the tools that you teach, Michael, and would that they could. Julie is the exception. She worked in an inner city school where some of the children who attended her classes had the benefit of learning these tools. And I just have somewhat of a philosophical approach to this, in that the pendulum, in my experience, the pendulum always swings too far in one direction before it starts to correct. And unfortunately, the pendulum hasn't swung far enough yet for it to start swinging back and for us to head to that critical mass that we all strive for. That's all I have to contribute.
Cool. Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate it. And it is time to allow a different thought structure to become our source than the common media game. I know that I watched a few minutes last night, and this is interesting. There were a couple of creatures.
You just faded out, Michael.
Yeah, I couldn't hear what Michael said.
Is that any better?
Yes.
That's better.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Okay, good. Not sure what happened there, technology, but in any event, I watched a few minutes last night of one of the news reports on it, and I just found it really interesting. And, you know, thinking in terms of the filters set, and what the mind is able to see is determined and limited by the filter set. And there were two preachers who, if they had an idea what Yeshua taught, would have their filter set to love. And their conversation with the interviewer was all about, you know, well, what was wrong with the government that they allowed these burnings of buildings to take place? And, you know, there was nothing about what are we doing in our community that allows such rage to build, that we're not healing within our community. All of a sudden, the conversation from someone who I would think would know better, the conversation was about what's wrong with the government that they didn't stop all this damage from happening. When, in fact, if the government had stepped in and done something, probably there had been more outrage, because that's what the rage was about, or at least that's what the rage was projected on in the first place. And it just, to me, it pointed up and inspires me on another level to let's get the tools out on a larger scale, on a planet-wide scale, for people to begin to understand how this device called the mind works, and how to live truly as a human being, as that active presence of love that we're designed to do, and how that's going to bring healing to our communities, to our families, to our whole culture, and to our whole planet. And that there are minds who are purposely, consciously moving, or I should say, I guess, unconsciously moving in different directions, in the destructive direction. And so, which energy one chooses to engage in becomes key in the process. So, Brenda, do you have any other thoughts? I know that you're not too far from where things were happening there in Ferguson. Do you have any other
thoughts in this regard and how it all ties together?
I guess we've lost contact with Brenda. So,
anyway, we do have another caller.
Hand up, sweetie.
We do have another caller.
4 minutes. Let's go for it.
810, you're on the air.
Hi, Michael. This is Gail from Etiker Lum. And my question. Thanks. My question is, well, I heard you say you just do a worksheet on it and it's better. Well, Adam had interactions with some people that he used to hang around with, and they all were acting differently. And I guess I'm trying to understand why his ex is so vicious and vindictive that she, it appears, because the one guy said word for word some stuff that she had said. I don't get why she is putting all this negative stuff about him out to the people that he used to hang out with. And I had anger come up, but mostly sadness. I just felt incredibly sad, even this morning when I was, you know, walking and saying my prayers. And it's like, why would anybody do that to another person? It just, yeah, I just don't get it.
Well, if you go back, you hear Yeshua saying, I am in this world, but not of this world. And until one recognizes what drives the mind, the words and the language of the culture are going to tend to take over. And if one is in, let's say, for instance, the fear filter, the only possibility that will come up is to build perceptions based in irritation. And when that irritation becomes too painful, then what tends to happen, one moves next to hostility in order to anesthetize against the pain. And so the internal, you know, I would suggest that you might want to bring in a measure of compassion for her, because she's probably in so much fear and so much pain that she can't think words other than those that produce that internal drug called hostility. And believe me, hostility is an internally produced anesthetic that anesthetizes against pain. And without the tools to be able to free oneself, the insanity is projected onto whoever the object of attention is. And in this case, it happens to be your son, who's the unfortunate target of that hostility. But, you know, it's simply the non-human condition running the game.
Okay, because our grandson has said to me specifically, Mama hates you, and so does my grandma, and I'm like, I'm aware of that. It's okay. I still love you no matter what. And then he asked me, do you love Mama? And I had to think about it because I wanted to come from a clear space, and I said, you know, I do, but I feel very sad at some of the things that she does or says to you about us. So,
it is really unfortunate that that your grandson has to be the recipient of that kind of energy. And one of the nicest gifts you can give him is for you to stay in that clear space and demonstrate what that active presence of the human life, what Rachma actually does, because that will be a bedrock for him to stand on for his whole life. And unfortunately, we're down to just the last few seconds, so I'm going to have to close the show out. And if there's more discussion to do around this topic, you could call in early in the show tomorrow. And everybody, thank you for being here. Create the best year you have of your eternal life. That's an awesome gift to give. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.
Evolving continuously.